From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A new documentary about one of Iran's most celebrated dissident lawyers, called simply Nasreen, paints a portrait of one woman's struggle against authoritarianism. Nasreen Sotoudeh, who is serving a 38-year sentence in Iran, was released from prison in November and then, in early December, ordered back. Her story is central to the women-led movement for equality in Iran. The documentary about her was secretly filmed by numerous anonymous women and men inside Iran. Here is part of the trailer of the film.
Nasreen Sotoudeh is a prominent lawyer in Iran who's been fighting for children's rights, women's rights, and human rights.
She is one of the bravest voices in Iran.
She took on cases that other lawyers were too afraid to take on.
We've seen Nasreen Sotoudeh jailed for defending human rights.
And it has cost her and her young family a lot.
Protesting against the law which forces Iranian women to wear the hijab.
The country's most prominent human rights activist and a voice for the voiceless.
I had been in Iran maybe a week, and I knew how to toe the line as a woman. And then I meet Nasreen Sotoudeh, who doesn't toe the line at all.
On Wednesday, Nasreen Sotoudeh was again arrested. She had been tried and convicted in absentia. According to her husband, she intends to continue her activism from prison.
That's a part of the trailer for the new documentary, Nasreen, narrated by Academy Award winner Olivia Colman and opening nationwide in the United States on December 18th. The film's producer and director, Jeff Kaufman, now joins me. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So this is a very moving documentary about a woman who most Americans have probably never heard of. She is, you know, at first glance, she's mild-mannered, she's small-statured, and yet she has managed to rankle Iran's authorities enough that they have handed down to her a sentence harsh even by Iranian standards. I understand over 100 lashes and 38 years. Tell me how you got involved in this film and why such a documentary is important for the world to see.
Sure. And you're right that unfortunately, not a lot of Americans know about Nasreen Sotoudeh, but they should. She's, I think, a role model for people everywhere. And one of the things that drove us to her story was that she represented, through her advocacy and through her personal character, so many things that I think speak to this country as well. I'd done a number of other films about human rights and human rights in Iran, one with Amnesty International about the persecution of the Baha'i faith in Iran. And I was really struck by stories about Muslim neighbors who had put themselves at risk to help Baha'i friends and neighbors, either go to school, open a business legally. Nasreen represented that spirit. She has put herself at risk to help so many others, religious minorities, women, LGBT prisoners, children, people on the death row, and at great personal risk to herself. She had been in prison for 3 years, started back in 2010. And when we reached out to her in 2016, it was also right when the Trump administration was trying to impose the Muslim travel ban. There was a lot of anti-Iran and anti-Islam sentiment being stirred up here in this country. And we just thought that Nasreen, as an example to her country, to the world, and to the United States, had a lot to say.
So she is trained as a lawyer. She, I understand, started out defending children within Iran's system, a legal system, which, you know, unfortunately has been set back many decades by a sort of fundamentalist version of Islam. And then she sort of expanded her fight to women's rights in general, right?
Yes. And one of the things that we explore in the film is Iran's incredibly rich and long history of activism for women's rights. You know, starting back actually thousands of years in earlier history, and more recently, the push to have women recognized legally in all aspects of Iranian law. They made some progress under the very repressive Shah, but much of that progress was then pushed back after the revolution. But even after the revolution, there has been a very resilient and inspiring women's rights movement pushing for full recognition, full opportunity in that country. I think there's a real bond between those women and the women in this country and women around the world who see that it's a shared concern. And so, by the way, the men who support them.
Right. And so I wanted, in fact, to turn to how your film was even made inside Iran. It was women and men who I understand secretly filmed this documentary. And it was in the middle of the film that she is arrested for this latest sentence.
Yes, yes. One of the things that was one of the great pleasures of working on this film was for me and our producer, Marsha Ross, we're also married. And so we worked together, getting to know Nazreen and her remarkable husband, Reza Khandan. Marsha refers to Reza as Nazreen's Marty Ginsburg, you know, that kind of support from someone who is also substantial themselves. And, you know, they're just not just great people on the public stage, but great people privately as well. So we worked with individuals who had to remain anonymous to film with Nazreen and others. And these are people who went into art galleries and up to protests on the steps of the Iran Bar Association, into movie theaters, following Nazreen into a bookstore. The access we had was just remarkable, and we owe them so much. And then, as you said, in June 2018, Nazreen had become sort of the lead spokesperson and attorney for a women's rights movement called the Girls of Revolution Street, women of all ages who went to a public place, took off the mandatory headscarf, the headscarf that the government says by law women have to wear, or they are being indecent and can go to prison for 10 years. These women took off their headscarves, put them on a stick. There's video of one woman who's like in her late 80s standing on a planter doing this in front of traffic. It just knocks your heart out.
We'll play that for our video, for our TV audience, because it's in the film. Yes.
Good. Yeah. And just for that simple act, these women were arrested, and Nazreen herself was arrested for defending them.
So these women, the Girls of Revolution Street, they would take off their hijab, they would go to a public place, they would take their hijab off, put it on the end of a stick, almost wave it like a flag.
Exactly.
I imagine that the activism against the compulsory wearing of the hijab is sort of symbolic, right? For it's not just about the hijab, it's about what that imposition of the hijab represents, and maybe that's why they came down, the authorities came down so hard on Nazreen?
Yeah, Nazreen said, if you can tell us what we have to wear on top of our head, you can tell us what we have to have inside our head. And so she's looking for a complete freedom, and a freedom not that isn't just sort of granted benevolently, but that is inscribed in the law.
There are, of course, so many issues around Iran. You mentioned the Muslim ban that the Trump administration had begun to impose or started to impose right out the gate. And then, of course, the Trump administration undid the U.S. nuclear peace agreement with Iran. And Iran's leadership has a lot of sympathy on the left internationally, but even the American left. Do you see that, however, as how do you place the women's rights movement inside Iran within that conversation around how the U.S. treats Iran? It seems as though the U.S. ends up encouraging the dictatorial aspirations of Iran's authorities when it corners the country.
Thank you. No, it's something that I talked about with Nazreen prior to her arrest. There seems to be this symbiotic dance between forces in Iran who don't want cooperation and who, in fact, that want conflict with the United States, and forces in the United States that want conflict with Iran. They, I think, feel that they build up their base of support by putting up barriers between these two countries. And there are a lot of historical reasons for both countries to be highly distrustful of each other. One of the things I always try to stress whenever talking about this film is that it's important for the United States to have the highest possible moral standards in our foreign policy and in our human rights. And we certainly have not been living up to that ever, but especially over the last 4 years. So there's a lot of distrust between each other, but there's also, I think, so much commonality if we can find a way to understand each other. And one of the things we wanted to do with the film was to show that the people of Iran are not their leadership, just like the people of the United States mostly aren't our leadership, and to try to create some opportunity to understand each other.
What has happened to Nasreen during her imprisonment? There have been reports of really poor treatment. She has gone on hunger strike. She was diagnosed with a COVID-19 virus.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, both privately and publicly. Nasreen so often uses the attention for herself on behalf of others. And I'm not trying to paint her as some sort of, you know, saint who's perfect. She's a real person, and she'd be the first person to say that. But months ago, when she was paid tribute by a group of German justices, she used that opportunity to call for the release of prisoners on death row. And more recently, when she was sent back to prison, and I'll tell you some background on that in a second, she used that tragedy for her to also pay tribute to others on death row and other political prisoners. She's always trying to use the limelight to shine on others. She, like I said, had been sentenced to a horrendous long sentence and a cruel sentence and had been in prison. She finally went on a hunger strike in August, a 46-day hunger strike, because some prisoners had been released from overcrowded Iranian prisons that were ransacked with COVID-19, and she was calling for political prisoners to be released to their homes to spare their health. After 46 days, she ended a hunger strike, but she had gotten world attention. But she was then punished by the government. They told her one day, we're sending you to a hospital to treat your heart condition, because she had a severe heart condition, you'll get some treatment there. They put her in a car, and rather than take her to a hospital, they drove her to an even worse prison called Garchak prison, which is about 50 kilometers outside of Tehran. Noted, it's called the worst place in Iran for women and one of the most unhealthy places in the world. It was there that she then got COVID-19. And when she was finally sent home on a medical leave with a heart condition and COVID-19, her family got COVID as well. So she was at home, recovering, ill. She'd been told, we'd talked to her the day before she got sent back to prison, and she told us that she had been told she had a 2-week extension on her temporary medical leave, and it might go on beyond that. And then early the next morning, instead, authorities yanked her back to prison, and that's where she is right now.
And this sort of temporary release, I understand, is somewhat common in Iran for high-profile political prisoners as a way to, you know, kind of undermine the public anger that keeps bubbling up.
That's part of it. And the authorities do find ways to, you know, torture prisoners, not just physically, but with expectation, but also keep the hooks into their families and try to threaten their families. You know, it's not just about the prisoner themselves. It's about the friends and families around them and the pain that is inflicted. And you can imagine for Nasreen, who loves her children and loves her husband and loves being home, the sacrifice that she goes through being separated for them for her work. It's horrendous.
Right. I mean, it's already deeply difficult to do the kind of work that she is doing. But when doing that rips you away from a family, especially your children, it's unimaginable. Now, tell me about the importance of international solidarity, because when light is shone on authorities and their actions from outside, that can, of course, have an impact. It can shame authorities into doing the right thing, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so for a variety of reasons, I would urge people to go to the film's website, www.nasreenfilm.com. That's www.nasreenfilm.com.
There, and that's Nasreen is how you spell her name.
You're very kind. Yes, thank you. It's important because there's a petition from PEN America that you can sign. There are live links to other human rights groups around the world that are supporting Nazreen and supporting other people like Nazreen. There's also an opportunity there to see the film. There's going to be a virtual theatrical release of the film. So you can actually see it through a local theater in Los Angeles. It's Lumley Theaters, but you see it in the comfort of your own home. So it's COVID safe, but it supports the local theater at the same time. So you can buy tickets and see what we're talking about. But I think it's important to note that Nazreen and her husband Reza have said over and over again that the most important thing to do is keep up public awareness and keep up public pressure. And Reza has directly said that this film is the best way to do that. It's been a real catalyst for people coming together all around the world to speak out on behalf of Nazreen. And that does create some blanket of protection for someone in her case. There was recently four young democracy advocates in Egypt that were released after a bogus arrest. And a lot of that was because of global public pressure. That's the best friend for political prisoners anywhere. So we hope that you can do that in part through going to www.nazreenfilm.com.
What impact has she had on Iranian women and young women in particular? I mean, while she was organizing those Girls of Revolution Street protests, obviously she inspired women to take action. But I imagine that her imprisonment has probably drawn even more attention to her case inside Iran.
Yeah. First of all, I just have to say that that there are so many amazing women in Iran who are, have the potential to actively shape their country in a better way, and who have really put themselves on the line for democracy and rights in their country. Anyone who doesn't participate in politics in America should be shamed by their example. But Nazreen has become the most public face of that movement. Like I said, she always uses her moment in the limelight to shine a light on others. It's a very resilient movement, and it's very inspiring that that women keep showing over and over again that you can push us down, but we'll get back up, and we're not going to stop until not only do we have our full rights, but we have our full rights enshrined in the law.
What did you learn from the making of this film about the men that support women's rights inside Iran?
It's not just Nazreen's husband Reza. Sometimes a single example is worth a lot. There's this remarkable man named Dr. Farhad Mezemeh, who's a close friend of Nazreen's and Reza's. He's someone who is a doctor. He opened a little publishing company to get information out about human rights in Iran. And oftentimes when someone needed to be bailed out of prison, he would be there to get that person free. When Nazreen was arrested, he was arrested as well because he was wearing a button that said, "I oppose the mandatory hijab." In other words, for wearing a button that said he supported women's rights, he himself was arrested. He went on a hunger strike when Nazreen was threatened. And we understand now this wonderful man has COVID-19 and is dying in a Evin prison. Mm. That's too high a price to pay to care about your country. And we just want to honor him and so many people like him.
What's interesting and previous, there have been so many waves of protest movements in Iran. And of course, authorities managed to retain their grip. And as you said, there's this sort of dance. But one of the issues that that marks the Iranian women's experience, at least from what I can see, is that Iranian women and men are highly educated. And this makes it difficult for authorities to keep them down. When you have a highly educated population that sees what happens in the world around them, but are told that for them, life has to be very different and very difficult and very repressive, it's an explosive mix, right? And just imprisoning Nazreen is no long-term strategy for authorities in Iran.
No, it's trying to keep the lid down with all hands and bolts you can, but the lid will pop off. More women have higher education degrees than men do in Iran, and something like 60-65% of the people in Iran are under 30. So there's a lot of demographic forces at play, pushing more participation and more rights in Iran. But as the leadership becomes more and more afraid of those voices, they are doing more and more they can to keep them down. You could find parallels in this country in the same way, disturbingly so.
And so the documentary, again, called Nasreen, spelled N-A-S-R-I-N, just the first name of Nasreen Sotoudeh, the Iranian human rights dissident lawyer who the film is about. It's what's also interesting is that you're part of this very innovative way of releasing a film online during a pandemic. So at nasreenfilm.com, our national audience can simply find a local theater to support and purchase tickets, but still watch the screening of the film online starting December 18th, which is quite remarkable. I imagine it's a tough time for independent filmmakers.
Well, yes. but on the other hand, there's something lovely about the way we can come together from around the world to connect with each other, to be friends with each other, to see each other on Zoom, and to realize how universal our need for basic rights are. There's a reason why Nasreen is often called the Nelson Mandela of our time. We need figures like that right now more than ever. And in this age of COVID, we can still connect, and we need to fight for that connection as best we can.
I should also mention the documentary Nasreen features an original song by Tony Award-winning composers. It happens to be performed by none other than Angelique Kidjo. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, can I brag about that song
Please
for a
do.
Second? Well, first of all, Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty wrote the song. Marsha and I had done an earlier film just last year about the great playwright and LGBT activist Terrence McNally. And Lynn and Stephen had written three musicals with Terrence, including Ragtime. So when we thought about doing a song for this film, we reached out to them, and they just wrote the most amazing song. It just knocks you over. And Lynn's lyrics reflect Nasreen's own letters to her children from prison. So you really hear it in her voice. Angelique Kidjo is a phenomenon. You know, she's one of the greatest singers in the world. She's won 4 Grammys. She's been honored by Amnesty International. She's an ambassador for UNICEF. She's everything you want an artist to be. And when we reached out to her, kind of just like privately, she said, sure. And I think like 3 days later, she got the track that Lynn and Stephen made and just made it her own. So it's been wonderful seeing this combination, you know, from so many different countries come together to make this beautiful song, which we hope you love. And I think that represents the spirit of what Nasreen stands for, too.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with the documentary.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
My guest has been Jeff Kaufman, producer and director of Nasreen, a documentary about Nasreen Sotoudeh, a prominent dissident Iranian lawyer and human rights activist who remains imprisoned inside Iran. And there is a lot of information on the documentary as well as about how you can support her at nasreenfilm.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Are You With Sonali?